It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. One of the issues likely to come up in the governor's race is Foxconn. The tech giant has pledged 13,000 jobs, but has recently said that it may not build the kind of factory it promised to build when it signed contracts with the state. So what happens if they don't create the amount of jobs pledged? And will all the workers come from Wisconsin? We're taking your calls on this one, 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. Tweet us at WPR Mornings. Our guest today is, let's just say he's a little skeptical of Foxconn. Tim Bartik is a senior economist at the W.E. Upjohn Institute of Employment Research. It's a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization in Kalamazoo, Michigan. Tim, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me on.
So we know the Foxconn plant and its agreement are, in some people's words, historic. How far from typical is this?
It's really unusual. I mean, not just in the size of, in terms of dollars, but the amount per job. So it's about 10 times the usual deal in dollars of incentives per job. It's 10 times the usual deal in Wisconsin, 10 times the usual deal nationally. So the usual incentive deal in the U.S. is equivalent to roughly saying to a company, we'll subsidize 3% of your wages forever. This Foxconn deal is equivalent to saying we'll subsidize 30% of your wages forever.
Wow.
So it is very, very big. And one of the real issues is whether it sets a precedent. I mean, Wisconsin, you know, there's no way that Wisconsin can afford to offer this deal to every company in the state. You can't pay 30% of the wages of every company in the state. You can't even do it for every manufacturer, even every large manufacturer. And the same is true nationally. So one of the key issues is, there's a lot of pressure to kind of expand this thing. What does it mean in general for how the kind of economic development policy you have towards all businesses?
And Kimberly Clark is looking for some sort of economic incentive package also from the state. Are they likely to get one that is as generous as the Foxconn one?
Well, I mean, there's some pressure to do that. I mean, politically, it's very hard to see how you would go to one company and say, you get this deal, we'll give you 30% of your wages subsidized, and another company you don't. I mean, what's the difference exactly? I mean, if Foxconn were some unusual deal with terms of the multiplier effects or the wages paid or whatever, then you could justify it. But, you know, the estimates by the state's own consultants suggested the multiplier effects might be somewhere between 2 and 3, which means that for every job at Foxconn, there would be a total of 2 or 3 jobs, that is 1 or 2 additional jobs somewhere else in Wisconsin. So 1 job in Foxconn, 1 or 2 additional jobs somewhere in Wisconsin, that's 2 or 3 total jobs. That's not unusual for manufacturing plants. So there's nothing about Foxconn that's particularly unusual about manufacturing plants. So how do you say to Foxconn, you get this deal, but you say to Kimberly Clark, you don't. You say to some company in Milwaukee, you don't. Green Bay, you go on and on and on. It politically, it's very difficult to say no. On the other hand, you can't afford to say yes.
So here's my question for you. There are people who say it's not just the jobs that Foxconn will be hiring. It's the fact that Foxconn is creating this area that other organizations, other businesses will come to, and then they will hire. That's what you're talking about with the multiplier effect. And what you're saying is, yeah, that may happen, but it's not going to happen any differently than any other manufacturing plant out there.
Right, as far as we know. I mean, now, you know, you can always hypothesize if someone comes along. I mean, at some point, if you think the multiplier is going to be 10 or 6 or 8, you know, maybe the deal is justified and maybe the separate treatment is justified. But I haven't seen any analysis that really presents a realistic case that for some magic reason, this is such a high tech, there's going to be such an incredible cluster of businesses created. Yes, there will be some multiplier effects. There always are. When you have a new manufacturing plant located that pays high wages, there are going to be suppliers to that plant. The workers are going to go out and buy things at grocery stores, restaurants, local retailers. Yes, there's a multiplier effect. Is it a miracle multiplier effect for Foxconn that's totally off the charts? No, probably not. there's been no evidence presented that it would be unusually high. As I said, the state's own consultant said the multiplier would be somewhere between 2 and 3.
We are talking right now about Foxconn. There's a promise of 13,000 jobs, and that Foxconn may or may not be able to make that, or may not be able to build the plant that it promised that it was going to plant. Tim Bartik is on the line with us. He is from the W.E. Upjohn Institute of Employment Research from Kalamazoo, Michigan. I should note that Tim mentioned that the state is subsidizing 30% per job, and I heard that the job, the average salary at Foxconn is going to be around $55,000. Is that true?
That's what the projections are. I don't know whether it's actually true. Those are the projections that the state presented.
If that were the case, the state would be $16,500 would be coming from the state for each of those jobs.
Yep, that's right.
So what do you think about Foxconn? Do you think $16,500 or more per job is something that we should be investing in? Do you think that the multiplier effect is, in fact, going to be higher than we're thinking it's going to be, and that the entire area is going to grow and that investment will pay off? 800-642-1234. You can also email us at ideas@wpr.org or tweet us at WPR Mornings. So let's talk about this announcement that Foxconn just made that they may not build the plant that they said they were going to make. What does that mean?
Well, I mean, the consequences, I think, to some extent depend on whether or not they cut back everything they do. The way the state structured the deal, half of the money is conditional on how many jobs is created. Half is conditional on how much capital investment is created.
Mm-hmm.
So if they cut the whole thing in half, that is half the capital investment, half the jobs, then the subsidy will be half as large. I mean, you know, really it's the same essential deal in terms of amount per job. However, if they decide to cut the jobs in half and they decide to keep the capital investment the same because they're going to put in a lot more robots or something, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then the subsidy would not be cut in half. The subsidy would be cut some because, as I said, half the subsidy, half the incentive depends upon the number of jobs. But since the other half depends on capital investment, the overall subsidy might be cut by a quarter. So the amount per job would actually go up if, in fact, the way in which the project is restructured is to kind of substitute capital investment for labor. So, the devil's in the details, as it usually is. It's possible the restructuring of the deal could lead to the cost per job being even higher than the $16,000 you already mentioned.
Yeah, but how do we know? I mean, all Foxconn said was we may not build according to the plan that we contracted with the state. But how do we know that they may go all robotic? How do we know when they're going to start building and make these plans public?
Well, I mean, as far as I know, I mean, there's no obligation for Foxconn needs to tell the state at various points how much capital investment it made and how many jobs it created. I don't know if Foxconn's under any obligation to the state to tell it in advance any of this stuff. Hopefully they're working in the spirit of cooperation and the state knows what to anticipate, and hopefully there's full information. And you know, ideally, I would think that the public and taxpayers and voters should know what is likely to arise from the deal. Is the cost per job likely to be higher than was originally projected or not? I mean, I think people should know that, ideally. But I don't know whether Foxconn is obliged to fully inform the state of all of its plans, or maybe their plans are changing all the time. I mean, they could be quite different 2 years from now than they are today.
We are talking about Foxconn and whether or not they are going to be creating the jobs they said they were going to be creating and how much it's going to cost the state. Taking your calls, Jeff from Green Bay. Welcome to the program, Jeff.
Hi, good morning. It is nice to hear the guests acknowledge that it's a graduated and they only get the benefit that they earn. But I do believe that the comparison between Foxconn and KC is a little apples to oranges. Foxconn, it's a new manufacturing segment. It's tech. It's something that Wisconsin would like to bring in and see grow. KC is in paper. It's something that's dying. It's been dying in Wisconsin. It's
interesting.
It's not something that we're going to see growing in Wisconsin. Foxconn is something we'd like to see growing in Wisconsin and everything that goes along to support it.
Interesting. Thank you for that, Jeff. So Kimberly Clark is old business. It's a business that is dying, Tim Bartik. And Foxconn represents where we're going in the future. What do you say to that?
Well, Foxconn, ultimately, it's a plant that's making flat-screen TV monitors. There's some technology involved in designing these things and in how you manufacture them. Whether it's the wave of the future, it's a piece of technology, involves some sophistication. As I said, I think there are some multiplier effects of it. Are they likely to be six? No, I think they're likely to be two or three. In which case, it's frankly a little hard to see how the deal pays off at a multiplier of two or three. You need to reckon with that, yes, you bring in jobs, but the data suggests that for every 100 jobs you bring in, ultimately only 20 of them go to local residents. The other 80 go to in-migrants. So, it raises, when you hear about job creation, not all those jobs go to Wisconsin residents. In fact, about 20% do. And you also need to reckon with that, yes, it brings in a lot of new tax revenue, but those residents are going to expect for their kids to be educated. They're going to expect police and fire services.
So your public
service costs go up by close to the taxes.
Okay, so we're going to explore that in a moment. We are talking about Foxconn and what they are promising and whether those jobs will appear and who will be taking those jobs. 800-642-1234. Ideas at WPR.org, or you could tweet us at WPR Mornings. We're going to be back with Tim Bartik in a second. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. Foxconn has recently announced that it has changed some of its plans, namely that they won't confirm that the building that they said they were going to build when they contracted with the state is what they will build. But leaders say they are still committed to a $10 million investment and 13,000 jobs. What are the other issues that are cropping up with this deal? We're taking your calls on this, 800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@WPR.org, or WPR Mornings is our Twitter handle. Tim Bartik is a senior economist at the W.E. Upjohn Institute for Employment Research. This is a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization in Kalamazoo, Michigan. Tim, a moment ago, we were talking about how many jobs are going to go to Wisconsin residents. You threw out the number 20%. Is that realistic, that probably only 20% will go of the jobs will go to people who are currently in Wisconsin?
Well, yes, if you only trace down the whole chain of vacancies. So even if Wisconsin, let's say that out of every 100 workers Foxconn hired, they hired 80 locally and 20 from outside. But the 80 locally, say most of them are already employed. That creates a job vacancy. And that job vacancy, in turn, needs to be filled either by a local resident who's not employed or someone else who's already employed or someone from out of state. So ultimately, when you create new jobs in a state, it either has to result in someone in the state who's not employed getting a job or someone from outside the state moving in to take the job. The jobs that are filled by existing employed residents just create other vacancies, and so the vacancy chain ends up leading ultimately to either Wisconsin residents or out-of-state residents. Wisconsin residents otherwise would not be employed getting the jobs, or people from out-of-state. And so when people have looked at studies, it's pretty consistent. Job growth leads to population growth, and the relationship is roughly that, 10% job growth leads to 8% population growth at the state level.
And when you have population growth, as you said, people expect things like education and police and fire and things like that. Oliver Wendell Holmes once very famously said, I like to pay taxes, with them I buy civilization. People don't necessarily like to pay taxes, but they want that civilization.
Right, and that needs to be accounted for. One of the problems, I think, with some of the fiscal analyses that have been done of the impact of Foxconn on the state budget is the current fiscal analyses that have been done by the state government assume that Foxconn and the multiplier jobs will just create tax revenue for the state. The assumption is that there will be zero public service costs in terms of hiring, you know, spending more money on K-12 or spending more money on universities or on local government assistance or revenue sharing. And the reality is, you know, unless you're assuming the quality of those services is going to deteriorate because you're going to, you know, you keep the same number of teachers, you have more students, you'd have higher class sizes. Mm-hmm. If you keep the same number of police and fire, you have more people, you have lower response times. You keep the same spending on roads, and you have more people, and you have more congested roads. So one way or the other, added population causes cost. Either you spend more money to keep public service quality constant, or you allow the public services to become more congested and the quality to deteriorate.
We are talking about Foxconn today and taking your calls. Meg from Montello, she wants to correct something that we said earlier. Meg, welcome to the program.
Good morning. I wanted to comment on the idea that Kimberly Clark is an old business. I have a problem with us giving money to Foxconn, setting this precedent, and then turning away businesses that have been in our state for such a long time. Kimberly Clark creates paper towels, toilet paper, baby wipes, feminine products, things that we're not ready to stop using at this point, regardless of whether they're good or bad for the environment. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm just talking about us being ready to no longer use those. So the idea that that's an old business that's going to go away, it doesn't fly. It really doesn't. So by not giving them money and giving Foxconn money, what are we saying to the businesses that are here in Wisconsin that have been with us for such a long time?
Meg, thank you for that. I'm really glad you called in. What do you say to that, Tim?
Well, I think it's true that Kimberly Clark will have multiplier effects as well. And you know, we don't know exactly what the future of technology. Who knows? Maybe flat-screen TVs 10 years from now will be made all with robots.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe there's no future to the Foxconn jobs. We don't know that. I mean, you know, the technology is developing. And, you know, it's also true that Kimberly Clark has multiplier effects as well, and I'd expect that there'll also be about two or three for every job. The additional one or two jobs are created locally, or if jobs go away, one or two additional jobs is destroyed. The reality is, though, the state can simply cannot afford to give a deal the size of Foxconn per job to every company in Wisconsin, or even every manufacturing company in Wisconsin, or even, you know, even if you decide to cut out all the small manufacturers, even every large manufacturing company in Wisconsin. You simply cannot afford to subsidize 30% of wages for any large proportion of the companies in your state. So if you're going to do that kind of thing, you have to be really, really targeted and have some very special reason for giving such a large subsidy. Oh. I simply don't see that in the case of Foxconn.
Okay, so if a state does want to incentivize business in its state, what's the best way to go about it?
I would be much more moderate in what I offer. I'd offer a deal that I could do consistently for all companies, and I would target as much as possible for high multiplier companies. In other words, if you have a choice between one with a multiplier of 4 and one with a multiplier of 2, choose the multiplier of 4. The other thing I would do is I pushed in the past that we need to look at our small, medium-sized business sector. Like Wisconsin has a very large base of small and medium-sized manufacturers, and what they need to expand is not subsidies so much, but in many cases they need job training for their workers. They need technical assistance with finding new markets. You know, we have things called manufacturing extension services that work in helping manufacturers find new markets, become more productive. And so, you know, frankly, I think a better investment would be, if we're going to have incentives, tightly target them on very high multiplier firms, make sure the amount's moderate, make sure it doesn't break the bank so that it undermines financing for public services, and then let's focus more on trying to boost our economy by helping, provide various kind of customized services like job training to small and medium-sized manufacturers. That I think will have a higher bang for the buck than some of these large incentive deals.
One of the questions that I have about Foxconn is that we won't necessarily know whether this investment has paid off for another probably 25 years, which puts us into the 2040s, which it kind of freaks me out that 25 years from now is going to be in the 2040s. We have such a short-term memory. We only really pay attention to what's in front of us. So how will we know? Will there be benchmarks in place so that in 20 years, in 25 years, when things are going really well or things are tanking, we can turn around and say, yeah, this is because of Foxconn?
Well, I think that is a problem with these incentives. And one of the real issues with Foxconn, with many of these incentive deals, is the incentives are too long-term. In other words, essentially the incentives last for 15 years for Foxconn. Now, why do they last for 15 years? I think it's because, frankly, political leaders find it easier to give away their successors' tax base rather than their own.
Mm-hmm.
So giving away some taxes you might collect or giving away some subsidies 10 or 15 years from now is kind of politically attractive, because you're not going to have to deal with that. Another thing I would do is with some of these incentive deals, shorten the term of them. You know, make them no longer than 5 years, because then at least you're not putting the burden of the incentives. Because basically, this is a contract with Foxconn. Wisconsin is contractually obligated to Foxconn as long as Foxconn creates a certain number of jobs, has a certain amount of capital investment. And so there's going to be some future government legislature who 12 years from now is going to be paying this amount of money, and they're not going to really have a choice. I mean, they have a contract. They're legally obligated to pay it. And, I think there's a problem in postponing the cost to your political successor. The incentives are all wrong politically.
We are talking about Foxconn, whether or not they are going to have 13,000 jobs, and where those jobs are going to come from, where the people to fill those jobs are going to come from. We've been talking to Tim Bartik. He is a senior economist at the W.E. Upjohn Institute for Employment Research. It is a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization in Kalamazoo, Michigan. Tim, thank you for being with us today.
Thank you for having me on.
I'm Carrie Kaufman. It's The Morning Show, and you are listening to the Ideas Network.